Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Okay, here I go.
Here's John Williams.
Well, I get 2 hours, actually. Hi, it's John. It's 107. We'll be here till 3, Saturdays from 10 to noon, don't you know?
Lord have mercy.
And remember, on Facebook, I'm WGN King John. We posted a recipe on our station's website. We'll share it on my Facebook page, too. Are you interested in a real... good Texas caviar recipe? Maybe you're not. Sounds like an odd thing to bring up at the beginning of the show, but I just wanted to mention, though, that we did put it on there, and if you're interested, it's there. Came up yesterday, and we were visiting with Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. He comes on with us on Wednesdays, and as we were going through some text messages and email from listeners, somebody wanted to know about a particular recipe from Orion Samuelson. I mentioned that when the station used to do a cookbook, 1 year I included Brenda's Texas caviar. It's not unique to us. You've heard of it. You've maybe bought it at Costco or Whole Foods or wherever, but, you know, it's that chopped beans and onions and celery and a vinegar oil, and it's really in a vinegar dressing, and it's just one of the best things on earth. And I think my wife's version of it is really good because that's the one I eat. And some of you said, oh, boy, I'd like to see that. So there it is. Go ahead, Ella.
So good.
Doesn't it, though?
Yeah, I've never had that before.
Well, so where is it at WGNradio.com, then?
It's in your show page.
Okay, so go to the John. So click on WGNradio.com.
Shows.
See, it'll say shows.
And
click
then
on me.
Go
boom
to your name, yeah.
Click on my name. And
I'm
there
just going to keep talking over you so it's even harder for people to understand.
No. You're helping us out. And then is it also on my Facebook page, or we're just telling people to go to WGNradio.com?
It's also on your Facebook page.
And I'm WGN King John there, if that helps you out. So a bunch of ministers gathered to petition the city before they make it the law to not raise the rideshare taxes. Now, this has come up on this show a few times, but I don't know that we've put it to you as simply as this. If they raise the tax on ride shares, will you use ride shares less? I think that ride shares are not inexpensive, right? Whenever I use a ride share, if I use Uber or Lyft, I think, okay, but this is gonna cost me. It doesn't feel cheap, does it? The L feels kind of cheap. The L feels to me the least expensive way to go, CTA. And then to me, a cab or a ride share is about the same. The most expensive way would be to buy a brand new car, you know, pay for that, gas, oil, insurance, all of that stuff. So that's the mindset I think you have to have. If you're going to be using ride shares a lot, even a lot, is it's cheaper than a car. And that's almost always going to be true. So you can justify it. You can say, hey, let's go over there. We'll just ride share. Well, that's $12. That's $18. That's $9. But it's now $254.
You know what? Rideshare actually takes the most money out of my credit and debit cards.
That's your number one expense?
Mm-hmm.
Would you guesstimate? Do you know how much you spend per month on a ride? You do not own a car.
I don't own a car.
You live in a city. You work downtown. So you are ground zero for rideshare.
If I'm living a normal social life, then probably $50 at least, maybe even $70 or $80 a month.
Ella, if you make that sound like that's a lot, and maybe that is relative to your budget, but relative to a car payment, you don't have a car payment for under $100 anywhere.
Right. So I choose this over that, that's for sure.
And that's just a car payment. You know, as I don't want to sound like your father, but then you throw in the insurance, honey, and the gas and the oil. You got to get the oil changed every 3,000 or 5,000 miles, and you've got yourself a nickel.
And you know, it's the only investment, John, that loses value the moment you drive it off
the block. You drive it off the showroom floor, the next guy will give you less for it. Now, why is that?
Okay, boomer.
That topic in the second half hour. I had an epiphany, by the way, when I was watching a guy give kind of a TED talk about the difference between millennials and boomers. So if you're, say, 60 years old, you're a baby boomer. If you're 30 years old, you're a millennial. What's the difference between the two? Why are they baseline angry at each other these days? Explained. And I had a little epiphany about that. Maybe you will, too. There was one single sentence in this talk that I went, holy cow, he's got a point there. You'll hear that after 1:30. But right now I'm going back to the rideshare thing, and that is, just to remind you now, if you're in the city, you're already paying 72 cents, Elif, per ride.
Mm-hmm.
if this tax goes through, it's going to go up 53 cents to $1.25. That is, you take a ride share from your neighborhood to somewhere else. And if you take it downtown, this is the one that gets all the attention, and rightly so, it's going to go from 72 cents as a tax to $3. I'm sorry, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
I don't care how much money you have, that's a lot of money.
I think the biggest concern is rideshare has been great to avoid drunk drivers.
Yep.
And you're probably going to see that go back up because people would rather
take
risk
their chances.
It. Yeah. And that's, for me, the scariest part. But at the same time, I wouldn't want to have to pay more as a regular driver or commuter to the city. And I would rather have the rideshare people have to pay for it. But I don't really know how to feel.
They call this a congestion management tool, and I'm all for that, but let's call it what it is. It's a way to make $40 million, and they're going to make it off of your back and my back, and the question is, are you going to say, that's it, I'm out? I don't know what you're going to do, though. I guess you could take a cab. You could take the L, you could walk, you could buy a car, but those aren't convenient or inexpensive options.
You know, sure, it's raising money, but it is a real issue. You talk about it all the time in
the
city.
I hate the congestion of Ubers.
I remember talking to one of the candidates for mayor before Lori Lightfoot won, and you know, the number he used, I swear, was 40,000. There are 40,000 rideshare drivers out at any given day in Chicago. You know, that's a lot of cars that are out on the street, and Lightfoot points out that they're idling, they're sitting around, they're polluting while they're waiting for a ride. So, I mean, I think it is a legitimate issue. They do need to figure it out somehow.
Listen to this statistic, Steve. Rosa Escanaro, commissioner for the Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection, told aldermen at Tuesday's budget meeting that rideshare trips for 2019, how many rideshare trips will we have this year in Chicago? 111 million. 111 million trips.
Wow.
Compared with in 2015, 28 million. We've gone in 4 years from 28 million to 111 million. So there's a revenue opportunity there, but they're already making it. You know, Uber and Lyft drivers, if you think it's going to hurt you because now you're going to get fewer fares, you would have all done yourself a favor if when you were waiting for somebody or picking somebody up, you found a more convenient place to stop. It's like rules do not apply. Ah, we'll just stop here.
Well, maybe that's a better thing to look at. Having things like airports do where people can go if they're drivers
staging
or cab
areas.
Drivers. Yeah, staging areas that are out of the way.
Yeah. And they'll do that at festivals, the United
right.
Center,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. Well, so it's going to go up 72 cents. And now here are some low-income people on the South and West Side through their churches petitioning the city not to raise it. And Uber and Lyft in the city, or the city, is saying, hey, this is going to be good for you because mostly you're not going from Austin downtown. Mostly you're going from Austin to Austin, or Englewood to Englewood, or Englewood to some other neighborhood on the south side. You're not coming into the city. So the one that is glaring is that if you by yourself take an Uber downtown into the city downtown, then you're paying an extra $2.28. It's a $3 tax walking in the car. But that's not most people. They say mostly you're just going from neighborhood to neighborhood, and if you share that ride, it's going from 72 cents to 65. You're saving 7 cents. So you got no reason to complain, they say. If, however, you're going to take that just from neighborhood to neighborhood, it's, remember, going to go up from 72 cents to $1.25, it goes up 53. The only way you save money on this is if you stay in the outlying areas of the city and you share the ride so that you can manage that. And my question to you, 312-981-7200, is how do you think this will affect you? Will you start to share more? Will you use it less? Or will you just say, hey, it's still better than a new car payment, so I'm still going to go ahead and do it. I'll just, you know, hit the button. I mean, you really don't microanalyze the cost that much. If you saw a ride was going to cost you $12, now it's going to cost you $13 or $13.30, you're probably not going to split that hair. They're gambling. I wonder what your take on this is. Here's your turn to call. Or tech, talking about rideshare fees. The city wants to go from 72 cents per ride as a tax to upwards of $3. And I'm just asking you, Is that going to change your habits? Hey, Rob, you're on WGN. What can I do for you? Thank you for the call, Rob. Rob was asking, what about VIA? which is another one of the rideshare services, right? And I believe, and they're included as well. We mostly, does people, do, Lauren Lapka, do you use VIA, VIA? That's one of them,
I've
right?
actually never heard of it.
Every now and then, somebody's handing out little stickers, little cards for me to give it a try. Like if I, you know, sign up for the service, my first ride is free. And I think that's VIA. Don, you're on WGN. Hi, Don.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that it seems like half of the Uber Lyft cars that are used have license plates from other states where they're not even paying, you know, the Illinois state tax for the license plate or the city sticker or the county sticker or any of the fees. They're just using the infrastructure and making money off of the city and not putting any money back in.
Where do you think those people live?
It seems like a lot of license plates are Indiana.
I don't know anything about this, so you, I haven't noticed that either. But say you're right, then you're suggesting people from, say, Hammond, Valparaiso, drive over here, drive around, use our roads, make the money, and then they go back to Indiana?
That's correct. And then they get their money paid to them in Indiana, so they're not paying the state, you know, income tax or any of the taxes that are associated with having a car in the city.
Interesting point, Don. Thanks for the call. I hadn't noticed that. Hey, Catherine, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
Good. Well, I'm going to come at you from the other perspective. I am an Uber driver.
Oh, I'm glad you're calling.
And I do it part-time, and I'm going to talk to you about pool rides and why I almost always decline them when they come up on my screen. But before I tell you that, the gentleman that just called about the Indiana plates, a big portion of the Uber and Lyft drivers are driving rental cars for Uber and Lyft, and those plates could be from anywhere because they're rental cars through Hertz.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Okay.
So somebody rents a car to drive it around for Uber and Lyft?
Yes.
Well, how do they, and they make enough money driving it around that they can pay for the...
If you're going to give me a chance, in a nutshell, what happens with the rentals is they pay, you know, $260 or $280 a week, and they have to do a certain amount of rides, and the first $200 they've negotiated for that rental has to come off their profits, their money first, and after they've worked, you know, the day or two to make that $260, everything else after that belongs to the driver.
So that's
Uber. So they pay their rental out of the first few days of their driving.
So that's Uber or Lyft just making sure there's enough cars on the road in the market.
Correct.
If you don't want to use your car or if you don't have a car, you can still
Correct.
Drive. They'll get one for you.
And they cover the maintenance.
How
you,
about
you
that?
Pay the gas, but they cover the maintenance.
Okay, so keep going. What do you make of all of this?
So here's my thing with pool rides. First of all, I'm from the suburbs, but I do drive in the city a lot. And I almost always decline pool rides for two reasons. One is Uber and Lyft pay us drivers significantly less per rider for those pool rides. And they try to keep your cars full, although they rarely do, especially in the suburbs. People will choose a pool ride because it's $2 or $3 or $4 cheaper for themselves.
Yep.
But they end up with the exclusive car anyway because nobody else is getting in the car. That's the suburbs. In the city, however, the city will fill up. The first person in the car, the city will then, the Uber will then put up to four more passengers in my car. They'll fill four seats. Okay, so the first person in may not be the first person out. So they're getting in at 8 a.m., and then another person gets in, and another person, and those three get out, and three more get in, and that first person who thought they were going 20 minutes is now in my car for 2 hours.
No, nobody's in your car for 2 hours.
Absolutely. It happens all the time.
I would like to know what the...
happens.
Wouldn't the person say, excuse me, but... I'm growing a beard. Can we move it along here? What's the deal?
Yeah, it's terrible. And we get rated per passenger.
Oh, yeah.
And our bonuses and incentives count on the ratings. And passengers don't always understand. When they've accepted a pool ride, they've eliminated their time window for how long they're going to be expecting to get somewhere.
Yeah, right.
So they're going to give me a low rating when I don't control it.
What do you make of this increase in the taxes?
I think it's ridiculous. I think you're hurting drivers, and I think that you're hurting people who are wanting to get rides. I think it's ridiculous. I think there should be other ways that the city can figure out how to make money.
Really appreciate you listening. A lot of information there, Catherine. Thanks for the call.
Sure. Bye.
Have a good day. John, okay, boomers, not from millennials. It's from Gen Zers, 1997 to 2012, saying it to you. Well, it's okay, fine, maybe. It is from them for sure. But I don't think there's hard, fast rules on who gets to say it to whom.
That's a very short window of a generation, too.
Yeah, I think it's, well, anyway. 312 says, hey, why do I have to be forced to share my ride with some stranger that I don't know? Another revelation for me. Why are you shaking your head, Elif?
No, I'm
you don't
nodding.
You don't want to share your ride with people, right?
I don't like to. No, if I can avoid it, I don't.
Agreed.
Do it.
Yeah, no. So that definitely does happen, though. The added time, I've maybe shared twice, three times. It always went way longer than it should have. And two, I feel extremely anxious and nervous about my safety, depending on who gets in the car.
I actually witnessed a fight between a driver's passenger who looked like the driver's friend. And as that fight was happening, the rideshare users in the back got out and scurried away somewhere else.
Who was this guy fighting with? In the car? In the vehicle?
Someone, the person sitting in the passenger's side got dragged out the window.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it wasn't funny. It's not funny, but it was freaky, and obviously the customers in the back got out as quickly as possible.
You see, right. Every now and then you hear these stories about people getting in fights, and sometimes people get killed. And I think I need to pay attention to that. I'm living in a big city. You're living in a large metropolitan area. But I'm never going to get dragged through the window of an Uber. I will, before that happens, go, my bad. In fact, I'll get out here. You know, there's just so many ways to avoid getting beat up in the city.
Well, it's crazy because I think another reason why a lot of people may prefer ride sharing is, at least for me, I don't like public transportation because, I often don't feel safe in certain situations, especially based on times that I may be traveling because of work scheduling or, you know, going out. And I know I'm a smaller female, and that scares me. But now, you hear these stories with certain rideshare situations, or if, you know, you feel like you have to pool because everything else is so expensive, you're still not really feeling super safe.
Well, I was talking to some people who live closer paycheck to paycheck than I do. And when I said, well, nobody takes the shared rides. And they looked at me like, oh, yeah, we do. Oh, yeah, we do. And it's an economic decision. I can't believe they're in the thing for a real long time. Like the last caller said, I guess that happens. But mostly that's just the reality of them financially. Now, if you share in the city from neighborhood to neighborhood, it goes down a little bit. But if you, for any other circumstance, shared or solo, if you come downtown or if you're going neighborhood to neighborhood, it's going to go up, right? So citywide, 72 cents. If you are going to take that by yourself, it's going to go up 53 cents a ride to $1.25. You know, I'm also curious. Elif knew generally what her rideshare bill per month is. And you're guessing it's under $75. And you feel that. Am I right about that?
I feel it.
Yeah. And it's about under $75.
Probably.
Which would be, say, if it's, what would you say, $10 a ride, maybe, Elif?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just doing the math for you. So maybe five or six times a month, you'll pay for a rideshare.
Yeah, I don't even know if I take it that often, but if I did, then yeah, that would probably...
That's how it would work out.
I think it is around 50 a month.
Comes in clusters for us. If friends are in from out of town or if we're busy doing things, then maybe we'll rideshare here, rideshare there. Brenda and I are, you know, two people, one car, so we are certainly using public transportation, but I take the L every day. Lucky me, right? It's convenient for me. Citywide... If you're doing shared, it goes down 7 cents. That's all, though. You've got to share it. Maybe that's the problem with this, Lauren Lapka. You're only going to save 7 cents if you share a ride in the city.
Right. And based on what you're sacrificing, i.e., you know, time frame and
you'll
who you're getting in the car with.
You'll pay the extra money.
Right. It's worth it in the end when it's not that much of a difference.
Maybe they should discount it more there if they really want to see this thing go or give somebody a break. Because they said, no, this will be good for the people in poor neighborhoods because they'll save money. Maybe they won't. Okay, it's 1:30 on WGN. That OK Boomer story is in the news, not just because it's the latest little, you know, verbal exercise for people to put down grumpy old folks. There's something else behind it. I want you to listen to what somebody said, and you and I have a conversation about millennials versus baby boomers. This is John Williams, okay, boomer, that expression, those two words, okay, boomer, has become Generation Z's endlessly repeated retort to the problem of older people who just don't get it. A rallying cry for millions of fed-up kids, it's quickly been adopted by millennials as well. Reading Maureen Dowd's piece in the New York Times, but that's all you need to know about why it's out there. kids are using it to just settle grandpa down. Okay, boomer. Now, why boomer? Where did that originally come from? The Okay Boomer USA Today today says the Okay Boomer phenomenon started with a screed against Generation Z and millennials who have Peter Pan's syndrome or the inability to grow up. There was a guy who we have been looking for and can't find, but some time ago he decided he was going to give millennials, these young and the generation even before them, he's going to give them a talking to. So this is the video that got it started. This is why you have the expression, okay, boomer.
The millennials in Generation Z have the Peter Pan syndrome. They don't ever want to grow up. They think that the utopian ideals that they have in their youth are somehow going to translate into adulthood, and that somehow they're going to create this utopian society in which everything is equal, in which the government takes care of everything. Well, guess what? One of these days, just like the baby boomer generation, the generation before us, the baby busters who came after us, you're going to mature and you're going to realize nothing's free, that things aren't equal, and that your utopian society you created in your mind in your youth simply is not sustainable. It's just a reality. You can't escape it. You can't fight it. Hell, even the hippies came to realize their society was not sustainable. So just realize what you're creating in your mind isn't sustainable.
This guy puts that out there as though that's going to persuade them. But that then launched a million TikToks and viral responses and memes. Thousands of teens and 20-somethings, Joshua Bodie in the USA Today says, have subverted that rant with phrase, okay, boomer, explaining the reasons why their generation has ultimately dismissed the concerns of young people. Victoria Slatton, 28, a Washington, D.C. lawyer, said the videos are a sophisticated mass retaliation. It's not generation warfare. It's real criticism. Gen Z has made laughing at it an art. But the criticism is baby boomers. If you're 60 or 70, you may look at your kids or grandkids and say, you know, they're just soft and everybody gets a trophy. They don't work as hard as we do. They don't appreciate the value of money. They're flitting it all away. They don't even have a mortgage. And if you are 30 years old or 20 or 17, you're looking at that generation and saying, thanks for the climate change. How much good is that house doing you now? And all of the things that they judge the older generation for being wrong in their ways. And the lot, I think this is a big part of it, the lot that the 60 and 70-year-olds have left the 20 and 30-year-olds. They're looking at the world around them going, well, thanks a lot because you squandered my Social Security. The climate's probably not going to be habitable for a lot of people on Earth because of you guys. So that's, I think, the driving energy behind this OK Boomer thing. So it manifests itself in a lot of places, and one of them is in the workplace. If a manager is 50 or 60 or 70, and he's trying to hire somebody who is 19 to 29 or even older than that, they look at each other across that cultural divide. There's this guy named Neil Howe, and he writes about generations, right? He talks about the differences between them. Let's start with cut number one. This is a talk that he gave. It sounds like a TED talk. It might as well have been. It wasn't. And he says, millennials in the working place have this perception.
I get complaints about everything from short attention spans and poor grammar to flip-flops and Facebook breaks. According to a recent Pew study, most older Americans think that millennials are deficient in almost everything. Moral values, sensitivity to others, work ethic. Now, I think that there are two big problems with this kind of cross-the-board negativity. First of all, it's just factually incorrect. This generation has been responsible for huge declines in youth crime, teen pregnancy, teen abortion, declines in alcohol and tobacco abuse, and rises in youth voting, community service, educational attainment. If you choose to view young people primarily in terms of their faults, you will never be able to lead them because you won't have a clue about their what motivates them, about their strengths, and so you'll never be able to harness all that.
I thought that was a nice litany of, you know, sort of generational accomplishments or positive attitudes, positive attributes. that generation, those generations have.
That might be the first time I've ever heard a positive thing said about our generation.
Especially coming from a guy who is himself baby boomer.
Exactly.
But that guy makes some interesting points. There's more. Cut two.
Young people are not just defective replicas of you.
That to me was the sentence that I went, oh my God, that's what we do. We say, well, I never got a raise, and I had to work hard, and I didn't have a good car, and we didn't have apps to make our life easier, you know. We didn't tell the boss, hey, here's what you need to do to accommodate me at the workplace if you really want me to work. I mean, that makes us insane. And then we look at this generation that seems to be getting away with that, and we find them to be defective versions of us.
See, it's funny because as a millennial and me personally, my frustration is when we're generalized as a whole and I don't feel like I am any of those things. I've worked very, very hard my entire life. You know what I mean?
That's a nice point because I think a lot of people don't.
I think people who criticize millennials miss the point because maybe they're not working as hard. They're valuing other things. Their experience is more important to them. Travel is more important to them. Those aren't bad attributes. You know, working 80 hours a week isn't necessarily a good thing.
We think it is.
Well, we're wrong.
But again, there are plenty of millennials that are still doing that and making way less money. It's just situational. It's generalizing as a whole, just like we do with other groups of people.
I got to tell you, when he said this,
young people are not just defective replicas of you.
I went, oh, wow. I think we do that. We look at them and say, you don't work as hard as I did. You don't kowtow to the boss. You don't sacrifice your personal and family life enough for your workplace, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like those are virtues, Steve. And I put those in the positive box.
Well,
I'm starting to see the error of my ways.
Right. Don't you put in the positive box the idea that you should, you know, see more of the world maybe or experience more things or care more about the environment, things like that. And what Lauren's not also pointing out is that the boomers who are criticizing these people for not working hard aren't buried in college debt the way the millennials are right now.
Yeah, that was one of the memes that's out there is it's a picture of somebody like me, 1978, imagine the bangs. And, you know, so a baby boomer in their college youth. And on the top, it says, when I went to college, I paid for it with summer jobs.
Because you could.
And then underneath, the retort is, yeah, but tuition was $400 a semester or something like that. You could. You know, go to a college now. It's $30,000, and you ain't getting that waitressing.
And you're not easily getting a house right out of college either and starting a family because those are way too expensive.
Sure, but then what do you do? Instead of saving your money or starting with a small house like we did, you want to travel.
No, I have been trying to save my entire life. I finally have more than $2,000 in a savings account because most of us, many of us, live paycheck to paycheck, if that.
I think that's lost on a lot of people, too.
We
say, hey, you got a job. I mean, we you know, the president and all of us go, well, at least the economy is good and people are working. How much money do people actually have? Again, something that I think is lost on different sides of this divide. John, jump in here. You're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah. See, first of all, I am a baby boomer. I was born in 1946. I'm 73 years old. I do not have that attitude towards the young generation. I think they're very bright. Times change. And that's the problem with generation to generation. You get this curmudgeon look at the new generation and you shake your head, and it's not fair. Now, I had a friend who just passed away this morning, 73 years old. He had a tough childhood. His mother died when he was very young, and his dad was a drunk who would not pay any attention, so there was no love. My dad had the same thing, but we're talking about this guy who died. The guy who died eventually was drafted into the Army in 1968. He was wounded in the head in Vietnam, and he came home, was spat on, believe me, at the airport in San Francisco. And he eventually got a very nice job. He married a grand lady that was good friends of mine, And we had parties at the house.
Hey, John. Okay, I know this is a big...
Anything. He never said anything about these kids.
I appreciate your phone call. I know you've got a hard day over there. I appreciate you chiming in, okay? Thanks for the call. It's 1:45. Okay, so let's keep going. This is Cut 3, Elif. This is this same guy, Neil Howe, that writes about generations. He says, okay, if you can just get your head around that millennial mindset, there's a way to harness it. It is what it is. You might not like it, but if you want them to work for you and work hard, if you want to be successful, you need to do some things. Cut 3.
They're pressured and programmed. They're networked to their peers and they're bonded to their parents. They want structure, and they're looking for risk-free, long-term career paths, and they find them hard to find. So when you're thinking about millennials, remember you've got to learn to leverage these traits. We all know they're special, right? So you got to leverage that. They come in the first day, don't say, you're not special. I know they're Gen Xers who think that's kind of a tough love program. You know, you kids aren't very special. It won't work, I'm telling you right now. You've got to say something like, yes, you're very special, and guess what? We expect special things from you. There's so many ways to leverage positive self-esteem. They want structure. So leverage that. This is a high-maintenance generation. They crave praise. They're feedback junkies. And so you give them constant tasks, you give them constant benchmarks, and you say, tell them how they're meeting or not meeting their benchmarks.
Go back to that one again, Elif. Just at the very beginning, he was talking about how they were raised. So if you say, why are these younger people that way? Part of it is because of this.
They're pressured and programmed. They're networked to their peers and they're bonded to their parents. They want structure. And
okay, now there's Cut 3. Let's go to Cut 4 now, Elif. This is, again, the same guy, Neil Howe, and he talks about what millennials expect and what they want.
This generation is into teamwork. So you've got to leverage that. Hire them in teams. Organize them as teams. You can even compensate them as teams. In the era of sort of cutthroat youth competition, epitomized by, Donald Trump's show, The Apprentice, that era is coming to an end. Instead, give them networked IT and encourage them to help each other on the job. And allow them to see your workplace as part of a bigger team, playing a positive role. Millennials want to see themselves as participating in something larger.
Boy, they never pitched that to me. Nobody ever said, hey, if you work here, we're all going to have this positive attitude. We're all going to be on this team. We're all going to be rowing in the same direction. It was just, go get your paycheck. Not saying that's been better. I think we've adopted that attitude. It was better because it was our experience and we were successful. We survived it. I think a lot of us who are looking at this, scratching our head, would have loved to have had some of the attitudes at the workplace that millennials, I'm going to say, are enjoying, because some of those are better for the employees. Okay, last cut. This is Neil Howe. It's cut number 5, Elif. You got it?
Well, we know they're into norms. They're into rules. So leverage that. I mean, it's amazing. I talk to boomers and Xers. They say they're offended. They get angry when millennials do something or say something that's wrong. They think it's being disrespectful to them. And I tell them, it's almost never disrespect. It's ignorance. They don't know what the rules are. So organize a soft skills curriculum. Give them checklists. Tell them the do's and don'ts. Or review that. Give them a gold star when they do it right. Let them put it on their resume. They will thank you.
That last point's pretty good, isn't it? I mean, that's exactly what baby boomers don't want to do. That's exactly what they think is the problem. They want a gold star to put on their resume. You could literally see them peeling one off and handing it to them. He said, go ahead and do it. Go ahead and do it. It might make them feel good. If that motivates them, do it. He's not talking them down. He's not saying it's that trivial, but he's saying reward their better behaviors. And you remember the scene from Mad Men when Don Draper says that's what the money's for? I think that's the attitude that a lot of us have had over the years, is that you get to work is the gold star. And that's all you expected. It's 1:49. 312-981-7200. Where are you on all of this? I'm kind of curious. By the way, speaking of this okay boomer phenomenon that highlights the differences between Gen Z, Gen X, millennials, and boomers, was a legislator in New Zealand who was young, and she's sitting there in a body of people who are older than her, and she's lecturing them about climate change. Some of them have smirks on their faces. And as she begins to make a point, there's a little chuckle, and she gets dismissive about it.
In the year 2050, I will be 56 years old. Yet, right now, the average age of this 52nd parliament is 49 years old. Okay, Boomer. Current political institutions have proven themselves incompetent.
So if you're wondering how that phrase gets used, that's the one that's making the rounds this week. That's how you drop an okay boomer on somebody. 815, is it ironic that boomers raised the millennials? These are our creatures. It's true. John, you're talking about millennials who tend to be whiners. Gen Z is out to make changes and have run into the wall of boomers who refuse to change based on out-of-date information. And finally, Deanna said the best way for Gen Z to tell off the boomers is to show up at the elections. I work as an election judge, and the boomers regularly vote. It's rare to see folks younger than 30, especially the off-year elections, which elect local government. Yeah, I won't argue with an election judge, but I think that the people who are 30 years old today are so much more politically engaged. Your 25-year-old, your 35-year-old, your 30-year-old, you are so much more politically engaged than my generation was. That's maybe a boomer wants to disagree with me on that, but that sure is how I see it. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines. Ramona, you're next. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. What do you say?
I'm a first-generation Gen Xer because I was born in 65.
Yeah.
I have a 21-year-old, so he's a Gen Zer.
Yeah.
And then I have a millennial. She's 25. And I will say with them and their friends, my kids are okay because they have a mean mom, but I'm amazed at how quickly people throw in the towel, like, get a flat tire, and they're just lost. You know? I my son is more of a, well, then YouTube it and we'll fix it, you know, but very quick to say, we got to call somebody, you know, versus we're more of the generation of pull up our sleeves and get to work.
Yeah, well, I'm going to look in the trunk and I'm going to figure this out.
Yeah, not me anymore.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
I would have done that when I was 20, but now at this point with the smaller tires and everything, forget it. That's why I'm in AAA.
I think she's on. I mean, look, we're painting with a broad brush, and we can point to individual instances that don't apply to everybody. But the first time I got a flat tire, I fixed it. The second time I got a flat, now it's easier now to get somebody to do it for you. You've got an app, you got a cell phone, etc. I have one son who I don't think would have a very good chance of fixing a flat tire. He would say that about
me
now, too.
My daughter taught other people on campus when she was in college how to do it.
I appreciate your phone call. Thank you, Ramona. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Hey, Luke, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi, John. Hey, listen, I was born in 1955, and recently I had an opportunity to work for a large social media company. And at my age, I was probably the oldest employee there. And everybody else was, you know, generation that we're talking about. And all I wanted to say was, and I called them kids, and they treated me with nothing but respect, but they were the hardest working people that I've ever been around, including our generation, as we like to call ourselves. And what I found is the only thing they wanted to do was to do a good job and learn. Just be exposed to different opportunities. So I have nothing but positives to say about it. And believe me, I know I have a 21-year-old and an 18-year-old. But the people I worked with at that company were just outstanding young people. And I feel very secure about our future as a country with these young kids.
I'm going to end on that. Boy, what a terrific call. Thank you, Luke. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, John.
You bet. Have a good day. I appreciate you joining us. After the news, how does this real ID thing work? We'll get you that information on WGN.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
You kids.
Here's John Williams.
I'll stop that now. Mm-hmm. 207. Hi, it's John Williams, and we are downtown Chicago in the beautiful Skyline Studio. Overlooking blue skies, a couple wispy white clouds, and another beautiful fall day. Wish it was a little warmer. I woke to snow on the ground today. Hokey smokes. But it's been pretty to look at. The news click at WGNradio.com is our daily web poll question. We ask you about something in the news. Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson might step down, we said yesterday. Now we know he's doing that at the end of the year. You had three choices. You could say he's been terrific, he's been average, he's been lousy as a superintendent. Six out of ten have said he's been terrific. 35% said he's been average, and 6% said he's been lousy. I think one of the things that improved his Q score was after the Jussie Smollett story. He came out and sort of pounded his feet and said, "How dare you say that about our city?" You remember that whole scene? And I think a lot of us thought, "Oh, thank you. Thank you, Eddie. Stick up for us." There have been some things that have not been good for him. The Mincing Rascal spent a long time in our weekly podcast today talking about Eddie Johnson's legacy and why he's stepping down now. Was it because of that traffic stop? Is it because he's just tired and, like he said, he wants to spend more time with his family? Is it because the president came to town and said, "You got to get rid of this guy"? What's his legacy going to be? That's The Mincing Rascals, our weekly podcast. Wherever you get podcasts, it's free. Just search for or tell your smart speaker, play The Mincing Rascals. David Drucker's in our studio, press secretary of the Secretary of State, Jesse White. We're talking about Real ID. David, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, John. Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here. I've not been here before. What a beautiful view this is.
Isn't this a lovely studio?
Spectacular.
Yeah, we're overlooking the river. We're on the south side downtown. We're right across from the Sheraton and the NBC Tower. If you look north, you look straight up Columbus, and at the end of the row between the tall buildings, you see a sliver of the lake there. Navy Pier and the Ferris wheel over there, all the way around the bend almost in the river to the Trump Tower. It's just, it's nice, isn't it?
This downtown, this is the heart of Michigan Avenue. It's beautiful.
You know, we miss being in the Tribune Tower.
No, I could understand that. I've often thought if the walls in that building could talk, the stories they could tell.
Yeah. Now, Dave, are you still in the State of Illinois Center?
Yeah.
Will you miss that?
Well, I'm not sure my time frame. I may be gone before that building is sold.
The Thompson Building, right?
Building, yeah.
So I was just in there the other day getting, what was it? I was getting some city stickers or something like that. I think the outside of that building is horrible. When you go inside, I think it looks pretty cool. I think it's fantastic to look inside, up and out and around. The outside just strikes me as, I know it's a famous architect, but it sure looks bad to me. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, I'm dating myself, but I go back to, I remember being a reporter at the City News Bureau and going down over to the bus station to the newsstand there to get the latest edition of the newspapers to bring back to the office. And that was before the Thompson Center was built. You had the bus station there and the old Sherman Hotel. So
this is maybe a better version of that, but it's kind of an ugly building, right?
I see what you're saying.
I feel bad for Thompson because Jim Thompson wasn't a bad guy, still isn't a bad guy. Now they're talking about tearing down that ugly building and it has his name on it. That's got to hurt his feelings just a little bit. We reached out to his people and said, "Hey, would he come in and respond to that?" And they haven't gotten back to us yet. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about Real ID. This is a state program, right? Well, it's a federal program that the state is instituting.
Right. It's administered through the Secretary of State in Illinois, but this is a national program. Every state in the country is going through this, John.
A Real ID?
The Real ID is a license. A driver's license or an ID. You'll have your choice when you go to the facility, which one you want, that will be able to get you on an airplane or into a federal building or a military base after October of 2020.
It's important
to keep that time frame in mind.
What's that?
Well, we're still talking a year. That people have some time to do this.
We're running commercials on the radio right now, and I guess it's like, okay, guys, the clock's ticking now. 12 months, 11 months, we're on our way.
Yes.
This has been on the horizon forever, it seems. Now we're getting close.
Yeah, this was originally created a number of years ago in a response to the tragedy of 9/11. The basic idea here is to have the people at Homeland Security and TSA know when you're going on the plane who you are. And that there's not a problem in your background.
So then what information will the Real ID reveal that my driver's license doesn't? What additional screening takes place to ensure I'm not a bad guy?
There's a series of documents that we request that be brought into the Secretary of State's office. If you go to our website, realid.ilsos.gov, there's an interactive discussion there, and you'll know when you finish that point of the interactive discussion the exact documents, but I'd be glad to discuss it with you.
Well, for instance, just give me some ballpark things. So when I go to get a real ID driver's license, you're going to screen me more than I'm currently screened when I get my driver's license?
Yes, yeah, to get what we'll call a standard driver's license, which is what everybody has right now before the real ID, you'd still be able to do that. You simply come in to the facility, and we'll punch a hole in the old license and print out a piece of paper, and you can use those.
Well, what are you going to ask me? How are you going to ascertain that I'm not a terrorist with the real ID?
Well, I think that's a question, you know, that you might want to address to Homeland Security.
Well, I'm sorry,
we're following the standards that they've insisted that we put on.
But as a for instance, so when I go get my new real ID for 2020 going forward, what's it going to prove or document? How is this going to make the skies safer, for instance, or federal buildings safer?
Well, I think that's a legitimate question. I think Eric Zorn, the Tribune columnist, did a column on this last Friday, and he raised that issue as well.
So you're not going to ask what my background is? You're not going to do any additional screening?
No, not at all. Not at all.
But then what is the point of this?
What we ask when you come into the Secretary of State's office is a copy of your birth certificate or passport, certified birth certificate or passport. Then we need a Social Security number, which can either be the card or a payroll stub that has the number on it, and then two pieces of mail from a utility or government agency, something of that
and
nature.
And if I provide that, then I get a real ID.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That doesn't... I'm not mad at you. I'm just a little... I don't see those as great barriers to a potential terrorist.
I understand your point. I understand your point.
But the problem is the state government fulfilling a federal obligation. So Dave and the State of Illinois Center are doing what they have to do. Their idea.
I don't usually take this perspective, but there are criticisms of this. I think the original concept, the American Civil Liberties Union and some conservative groups, felt this was like a national ID.
Well, it strikes me as that, and I think if the price I pay is greater security, then some of us are willing to make that deal. I just don't see the security built into this. Is it that you're better able to track people? Is it sort of a national then database because of the ID, of the new ID?
I would say, John, you really probably would need to discuss it with somebody from Homeland Security or the Transportation Safety Administration.
Okay.
They're the ones telling us this is what the requirement is, and our job is to implement it.
Right, whatever it is.
Trying to be as positive to our customers as possible.
Well, sure. I mean, right, you are the wrong person if I'm critical. I'm curious. I might be critical, but at the end of the day, we got to get it done. That's your office's job. So I'm going to bring in those documents between now and, say, a year from now.
Yes.
And I'm going to get a new driver's license, which, for most of us, will serve as our real ID then, right?
Correct.
And that's going to, will it look different than the driver's license I have now?
It'll have a gold star on it. That essentially will be the big difference. I think we allude to that a little bit in the TV commercials that are playing now.
If I don't have a driver's license or don't want a driver's license, then I can just get a real ID card separate from that.
Yes.
Okay, and then with that, I can travel domestically, I can travel internationally.
Correct. Of course, you'd need a passport for international travel.
That's my next question. So I will need that to travel internationally, but I'll also need a passport to travel internationally.
Correct.
If I have a passport now, I can travel internationally. Will a passport work in lieu of a real ID?
Yes. A passport is considered real ID compliant. It's signed off on by the State Department, the United States government. So we actually encourage people to think before they come to the facility, do I really need, to be in line here and to get a driver's license? And I've used my own situation as an example, John. My driver's license expires in 2021. I have a passport that's good till 2026. So I'm going to keep the passport and use that. Even if it's a flight to St. Louis from Chicago, I'll use the passport for that and then renew the driver's license when it comes up in 2021.
Yeah. I have a global ID card, a global entry card. That works, right? Do I have any reason then to get an upgraded license?
I don't think this does comply.
The
I apologize
entry?
For not knowing definitively, but I don't think it does.
So people, go ahead, David.
No, I was going to say one of the other things that people that are listeners here that have a military ID, that's also real ID compliant, people serving.
312-981-7200 is the telephone number. Lots of calls, lots of questions, lots of texts about this. 815 texted in and said, John, I got my real ID in September. It was quick and it was easy, using directions on the Secretary of State website. I travel a fair bit, so it was worth the effort, says Mark in Frankfurt. Thanks, Mark. So his real ID then is enabling him to travel. But if Mark had not done that, he could still travel domestically with your driver's license the way you do now.
Yeah, until 2020.
October of 2020. And internationally he could travel, he would need his passport.
Correct.
And if he were like you and didn't want to get this done between now and the end of the year, he could put off getting the real ID if he has his passport.
Yes. Okay. I think the best way I think of it is that if you've got the passport, you have a real ID document.
Yeah. So as long as that passport is good,
correct,
you don't need a real ID.
Correct.
What is it going to cost me when I go get this done?
The same as the standard license, $30 for 4 years.
Okay. 312-981-7200. Your calls, your texts. Lordy, we got a lot of them coming up. Dave Drucker's here, press secretary for Jesse White's office, the Secretary of State. We're talking about real ID. You're hearing those commercials. As Dave wisely points out, it's October. You've got to have it done of next year. And if your driver's license, if your passport has an expiration date beyond October of next year, then it's not imperative because that can be your real ID. But to make it simple, October of 2020 is when you will have to have your real ID. So if my driver's license doesn't expire by that time, I'm still going to need a new driver's license?
Yes.
Really? So even if I'm not traveling, just going down the road and the officer has to see my ID?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I thought you were thinking of somebody flying.
Yeah.
If you are flying, yeah, you'd need a new one. But no, if you're somebody who's just driving short vacations or going to Walgreens to pick up prescriptions, like I do, you don't need it. Get the standard driver's license. It's a much quicker process.
And one last thing about that, then we'll take your calls and texts. 312-981-7200. If I'm only going to fly domestically, I'll still need the real ID,
yes,
correct?
Sir.
You won't need your passport to fly domestically. I mean, you don't need that now, but you will need a passport or a real ID in October of 2020 to fly from here to St. Louis.
Yes. I think the easiest concept to think of it, John, is that the passport is real ID compliant. It is a real ID document.
Yeah, understood. 630, will the real ID take the place of a driver's license? Will the real ID take the place of a driver's license? Well, when you get a new driver's license, you can make it real ID compliant. Your driver's license will be. You'll have one card in your wallet, right?
Right, right. If you bring in the extra documents that are you can get on that website, see what you need, you'd have the driver's license.
John, this is from 312. I spent 2.5 hours yesterday at the Lombard DMV getting real ID upgrade. 5 separate questions to go through, exclamation point. They were begging people to come next Monday when it will be real ID only, no other business. It's an inefficient mess of a program. All of the employees, however, were nice despite the crush of humanity. Are you seeing more people in the offices trying to get this done?
Realistically, yes. Particularly some facilities more than others. We are seeing an increase in Deerfield in the North Shore. This gentleman, and let me apologize to him and anyone else who's had an extended wait, we're terribly sorry. It's not something, you know, we're trying to do.
This is the federal government said you have to do it, and now people are showing. So on Monday in Lombard, evidently they're telling people all we'll do is real ID upgrades. Is that statewide, are all the offices doing that on Monday?
No, this is something we're doing to experiment. We understand that there are a lot of people that are interested in this program, and we want to get them through the system. So what they're doing is that there are a few places, and Lombard is the one, is usually a Tuesday through Saturday facility. And we're looking at doing this at other locations as well, John, where we'll open up the facility on the day
Monday,
it's closed.
When it's not normally open,
yes,
then you'll just do that there.
And we're going to bring in more employees, and we're looking at expanding facilities and hours. So, you know, we're trying to be sensitive to people. We understand. No one wants to wait.
This is George. You're on WGN. Hi, George. How can we help you? You're on the air.
Hello, John. The question I had, the same thing as the one right before. Me and my wife, we went to Lombard facility, and they told us come back later in the afternoon. We came back in the afternoon, and then they said they're not doing them. I mean, how many times do you have to keep going to get it?
I'm not sure what I can say, sir. I apologize for the experience that you had. I think sometimes they have difficulty being able to predict, you know, what the time frame is going to be. If there's a sudden rush in the afternoon, they may be completely wrong with what they recommended.
Well,
this is a new experience for all of us. And I would say this about the employees, not to defend your situation. I do apologize for that. But they are under a great deal of pressure. And it seems like everything I've heard that they're doing an excellent job.
Thanks for the phone call. We can't turn back the clock. I'm sorry you went through that, George. How about Greg? You're on WGN. What do you say, Greg? You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks. My question is, I have a passport. I want to get the real ID because I don't want to lose my passport, but why do I have to bring all the documents into the DMV? Why can't I just show my passport to the DMV and get a real ID? Thanks.
I think that's an excellent question. The best I can tell you is that these are the requirements by the United States government, what we have to implement.
Seems redundant, doesn't it? I mean, if I had all those documents for my passport, I have the passport to prove that. The passport should substitute for those.
Yeah, it is kind of ironic, but the passport put out by the United States government, one might argue, is a less secure document than the real ID.
So you still got to duplicate those documents.
Yes,
you've got to go find two pay stubs or two bills, a pay stub, et cetera, to document.
Yeah, and if people go to the website, it's pretty clear, the interactive, you know, with the documents that they need.
I'll give you the website again in just a second. Lorinda, it's your turn. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. I've been thinking about this since you guys started running the ad. I just moved to Chicago from Colorado 2.5 years ago. I have now a current Illinois ID. My son owns where I live in my condo, and I do not get any bills of any from any billing entity or anything. He takes care of all of that. He auto-pays it. What should I use as two things in the mail?
That's a good question. I'll have to check and see what's an alternative.
We run into that sometimes,
for that.
Where we're doing some sort of government business, and they'll say, just bring in two slips of paper. You used to have a million of them. Sometimes you're scrambling now, and then you'll find one, and they go, well, that really isn't good enough. That's a store credit card or something. It's not the same. So that's complicated. You don't off the top of your head know what substitute documents are for bills.
No, I'll get back to you, John, on that.
Okay.
Find out what the lady can do.
Well, it's 228 on Thursday, 228 on Friday. Let's take 24 hours. You're listening now. Hopefully you can listen tomorrow, and I'll have an answer for everybody on that. Good luck, Lorinda. I appreciate your call. Thanks for listening in Colorado. Hey, Jim, you're on WGN. What can we do for you? Jim, you're on the air.
Yeah, King John, I just want to preface this by saying I think it's a good idea. But basically, it comes down to the feds not trusting the states in getting driver's license to the people accurately. I mean, and people being able to basically get on planes with driver's license that are not accurate, isn't it?
I'm not sure I see your perspective on that.
I think it's...
Well, the perspective is that you're requiring more data, the address labels or address letters at address. So we're requiring more data for driver's license, similar to information that we would have given to get passports. So basically, the idea is the feds are just not trusting the states to do their job, and they're doing it, you know, as far as vetting
of
people getting driver's license.
I would suggest maybe that they're moving to have the states cover this and pick up some of the expense.
Did the federal government give the states money then to handle this program?
It's a little bit, but we've used the term unfunded for the most part.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I thought this is an, as they say, unfunded mandate. Dave Drucker, I have pages of text messages and phone lines lit up here. And it's going to be like this if you come on again. Some people are going to be unhappy. Some people are going to have questions. And a few people are going to pat you on the back. Will you come back again in a week or two, and we'll just do this again?
Absolutely, John.
It's a good commercial campaign to at least remind you got to get this done. Now, you've got some questions about it, and we sure appreciate Dave Drucker for coming in. Thanks
for
visiting
time,
with
sir.
Us.
Today it's a little harder as I feel my power grow. Don't you know there's part of me that loves to go into the unknown.
Smokes. That's Adele Dazeem, isn't it, their producer, Elif?
Right, yes. In the words of our friend John Travolta.
Idina Menzel singing, that's from the new Frozen sequel, right? Frozen 2?
Yes.
Why are you sharing that with us today?
Because, that was a first look at Into the Unknown, which is the new Frozen 2 theme song. And it's been editorialized to be the new annoying Let It Go from Frozen 1.
People loved and hated the original movie, but one thing that became was a sort of earworm. Do you have the original Let It Go?
No, sorry.
I think we don't have to play, but it was Adele Dazeem. It was Idina Menzel singing Let It Go, Let It Go, and everybody knew that song. I read today that song has been viewed, and I'm not exactly sure if they mean people watched the clip of it or whatever, but it's had 2.9 billion plays. People have online experienced Let It Go almost 3 billion times. So now the sequel is coming out, and you can tell it's the same sort of song, isn't it? I mean, I thought she was going to say Let It Go there, but she doesn't say that. She has that new version. And so people are writing now about how you're going to be tortured all over again. Same kind of concept, same kind of song. I don't have little kids, so that wasn't a problem for me. Maybe it was for you. Thanks again to Dave Drucker for coming in, the press secretary for the Secretary of State's office, Jesse White. Jesse didn't come in. David did. And as the calls and texts were lining up, I thought, oh, I know how this is going to go, and it's going to be hard for Dave because he's either going to get questions for which he's not qualified to answer. It's a federal program, and if you don't think it accomplishes that much, it's not that good of an idea. He's a guy at one of the 50 states just working to get the information out about it. He's not the decider. So he can't fix what are some, I think, legitimate concerns or criticisms. And then so many questions about it still. And so I gave him the stack of text messages that you sent into the show while he was on, 100 of them. And I said, work on these and get back to me tomorrow. For instance, somebody said, if I have somebody, a child traveling, who's under the age of 18, will they need the real ID? And he said, if you are traveling with your under 18 age child, they won't. But if they're traveling alone, as they sometimes do, then they will. And then some of it's conflicting information here, too. So welcome to any federal or state program, right? I'm literally just paging through so many of the text messages that came in here about this. And so if you didn't get a response to yours today, including the woman who said, well, I just don't have much of a paper trail anymore. Everything is digital, and they want you to bring in some copies of your bills and things that justify or verify where you are. She says, I literally can't find them. I don't have them. Brendan and I have been through that before, where I'm going to get something renewed or done, and I'm like, oh, well, we don't have a bill. So he said he would get us an answer to that as well.
But a lot of things that you even get electronically will have PDF files of what a paper bill would look like, and you can print them.
Print that out. Yeah, I said to him, I said, listen, some of them may be, it's going to take more work for you. Yes, you don't have a bill in the drawer, but you can get that done. It's just not going to be any fun.
Right, like a medical bill, because usually that doesn't even matter whose name is on, you know, the house stuff. Because the medical bill is to you, but yeah. Your address and your information's there.
Yeah, that's a lot of the stuff that I had. It was like, well, yeah, but anybody can get that. There's no proof that that's you. So how do you demonstrate that? So then I tend to overload. Like when I go to get my driver's license renewed, or if I've moved, or I've got to get something done, global entry, I just bring the kitchen drawer. You know, I just bring a file. I have like thousands of documents. I have term papers from the 8th grade that I got a B+ on. That ought to be worth something.
Yeah, I have a giant file folder of pretty much anything I could need at one moment for something like that.
And the idea is, and sometimes it seems to me like they'll still say we want a Social Security card. Well, if you were born more than 20 minutes ago, Social Security cards are easily faded or fixed. You know, to me, those aren't real strong demonstrators of who you are. I mean, my first Social Security card was thin paper, you know, and the information was typed. It wasn't laminated. It doesn't strike me as being a very secure proof of who I am. George, you wanted to say something. You're on WGN. How are you, George?
I'm okay, John. If you're traveling with a small child, how do you prove that it's your child? You know, I'm supposed to, you know, Uncle Bobby, could you take Billy to France? Okay. Or if somebody's kidnapped somebody, how do you prove that it's your child?
I have no idea.
Okay. You know.
Well, here's what they do. Here's what you do. You bring a DNA kit. You drop a little blood there, and you send it in, and then you give it to them, and that's how you'll know.
That's funny, John. Or a bunch of family pictures, huh?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'll tell you what. This is the federal government telling the states to do something without giving them money to do it. And after 9/11, we rightly lost our minds. We were going to do anything and everything we could to make travel safer. I'm not saying we should go back on some of these things. I'm not sure you need to take your shoes off. The other thing is, when you get your plane ticket, sometimes you randomly get the TSA check. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
And that's random. Sometimes Brenda will get it and I won't, or I'll get it and Brenda won't. A moment of truth for a married couple happens when one of you realizes you don't have to stand in that line, but the other one does. So what do? Do you stand with your spouse because we're joined? Or do you say, toodles, I'm TSA expressing through, honey. I'll be halfway through a Chardonnay by the time you get your shoes back on. Which one are you? Yesterday, we were visiting with Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic at the Tribune. We were talking about recipes and food. And one way the conversation came to a Texas caviar dip that my wife makes year-round. It's actually, she reminded me, better in the warmer months than in the colder months. I think it's a 12-month recipe myself. But it's the Texas caviar. We have black-eyed peas and onions and some beans and some celery chopped up with some vinegar. And you stir it all together and it marinades, and then you put chips in there, and oh, man, is that good. Them is some good groceries. I'm telling you, it is my... If you want me to come to your house, just say, hey, John, we're having that and some gin, and I'll be over in 20 minutes. We've posted that recipe at WGNradio.com. Just click on the John Williams page, and there it is. We even posted a picture of what it will look like, which isn't Brenda's bowl of Texas caviar, but it's one, and it'll generally look like what you see there. So if you need it, there it is. WGNradio.com on the John Williams page, or like me on Facebook, WGN King John on Facebook. All right. One other thing to get to, are you still walking in with more? It's funny because, thank you, Producer Elif, more questions. How long does it take to get your real ID? John, 30 minutes for me in Des Plaines. It went great. John, I went to Naperville. Go an hour before they open. Otherwise, forget about it. 708, John, go to the Plano, Illinois DMV. It's a brand new facility. You are in and you are out. John, when is the DMV open in Naperville on Mondays for the Real ID program? I don't know, but that's what he said. They run Tuesday through Saturday, is what it sounds like, a lot of these facilities. It's smart that they're open on Saturday. But they're going to open up some of them. This is experimental, and the Lombard one evidently is doing that. I don't know if the Naperville or Plano ones will do this too, but at least some of them will open on Monday and only do the real IDs. John, I went in Naperville. It went well. John, they cannot use a passport as the sole ID for real ID because no DMV has the equipment needed to verify if a passport is real or fake. So you've got to start all over again. Somebody asked, why doesn't that get the job done? They don't have the machinery for it. In Lake Zurich, 847 says, I got the real ID. Easy peasy. In Lake Zurich, went to Waukegan, didn't even make it in the door. It's a crapshoot, isn't it?
It really is. I got a real ID when I needed to get a new Illinois license, and I didn't really have much of a problem. But again, this was months and months ago, so maybe that's part of it.
Yeah. All the workers were super nice, but some of them are just hamstrung, according to this texter. Discuss the fact that women need to trace all of their names from birth through marriages. I guess that gets a little more complicated. Some of your IDs' names have changed, ladies, over the years. John, when I went to renew my real ID a couple of years ago from now, when I need to renew my real ID a couple years from now, Do I need to go through the same ID qualifications again? I think the answer is yes. We had mail from his office, and they would not. Somebody said that they went to one of the local offices, and they said, come back in October of 2020. If they told you that, they told you wrong or you heard wrong. You have to have it done by October of 2020 if you don't at least have a passport. Gail, it's John. What can I do for you? Gail, you're on the air.
Hi, John. Yes. Yesterday you were talking about difficult guests and experiences people had with dates and things.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
This was the conversation we were having about bad guest experiences.
Yes.
Which kind of devolved into Lauren's and Kevin's experiences with...
bad first dates.
It kind of became that. But at least some of the stories were, you've got to know how to be a good host, but doggone it, learn how to be a good guest to people. What have you got?
Well, we had someone offer to bring salad to a dinner party, and she showed up with a whole lot of lettuce wrapped up in newspaper, and that was it. Nothing else. Yeah. And then we had a guest who offered to bring an appetizer, and this was a different party, thank goodness, and she brought some raw fish, so we had to pull out the fry pan, so the house smelled of fish, and she didn't have any serving platters or anything. So they were people that really weren't invited back in a hurry.
Well, I think you need to know the party. There's some places where if you just bring all of the salad mix-ins, and then we all stand around the island there, and we make the salad, and it's chatty and fun.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
But that's not every house you walk into. Don't, I mean, some of the hosts and hostesses have spent a lot of time getting everything organized, and then you walk in with all your stuff. I got to tell you a little family story, too. One time we had my family over, and I don't remember what the timing was, but they were hungry, even as they were swinging by our place. They walked in with bags of Burger King, and I'm like, well, all right, I guess we don't need the charcuterie so much now. And by the way, the Burger King is kind of smelling up our nicely scented kitchen right now. So
yes, it is.
At least have the courtesy to leave your Burger King bags in the car. Don't bring them into the house when you're walking.
Exactly. Yes. Well, that changed the whole atmosphere of the evening, didn't it?
Thank you for the phone call.
You're welcome. Love your show. Thanks so much.
Gail, I appreciate your listening. Yeah, no troubles. No troubles. Where were we going here next, Producer Ella? I'm actually looking at this staggering stack of questions about the Real ID program, and it's literally distracting me here. 1, 2, 3. I probably have 20 pages here. And I think what we need to do, Ella, is we're going to take this list of questions that you've texted to 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll sort through them, give the most relevant, broadest-based ones. We're going to send them back to Jesse White's office and say, okay, Secretary of State, we know this isn't your idea, but you guys have to know the answers to these questions, and you have to be right. So what are the answers to all of these questions? Some of you are just telling us how frustrating it was or how well it went, but then some of you have kind of semi-complicated questions, which are very real for you. So let's get answers to that. We will do this tomorrow, or at least I'll report back to you tomorrow how much progress we've made on that project of ours. But we will definitely come back to you tomorrow. This time we'll actually be in the middle of our Bright Side of Life segment. But we will, say, before 2:30 tomorrow, come back to you with more information about this campaign. Hey, Mary, you're on WGN. What can I do for you?
Hi, John. I work at the DMV, and I'm just wondering what kind of problems you're having. Now, I don't want to say I represent the Secretary of State's office. However, I do work at the DMV.
Yay.
And I think when most people come in, they bring the wrong information with them. First of all, if you have a passport, you don't need to do any of this. However, after 2020, if you don't have a passport, you don't want to use your passport just to fly to Florida. That's why they're putting the star on either a driver's license or a state ID. So remember, if you're over 65 years old, that state ID is free to you and good for 8 years. So I would suggest putting the star on a state ID. If you have a passport, you don't need to do any of this but at your leisure because you have a passport.
Until that passport expires, it'll work as your real ID.
The passport expires, of course. That's, yes, of course. As far as bringing in information for your name and address, most people have, like you say, it's on the phone. And they can show their ComEd bill, their electric bill, their Verizon bill, as long as it shows their new address with their name on it in the last 90 days. For the people that are bringing in students, they all go to school, so they all get a report card with their name and address on it. That should be on there. Most of them have bank statements, and they have to go to the bank and download that, or they can bring that on their phone also, and we can look at it and take it off their phone. Now, for the real ID, that's just for change of address. For the real ID, they have to download that because those papers are being lasered in. So that paper has to go through a lasering process.
So what's the time then? If I go to get a real ID, do I walk out with it that same day?
Never. You'll never walk out. Everybody walks out with a temp, a temporary piece of paper. That new ID will come to you in the mail in about 7 to 10 days.
But I guess I can immediately start using that temporary you give me.
Yes, you can, as long as it's coupled with your old driver's license for TSA. That's what they want to see.
Somebody said to me that if you get the real ID, it's only $5 instead of $30.
If you have already renewed your driver's license and you want to put the star on your driver's license,
right, make it
then
a real
ID. It's only $5 to add that on there, but you still must bring in all the information.
This is very helpful. You know, this is the difference.
And I'll tell you what, here's the other thing. As far as with the women, yes, they have to show how their name changed. So the necessary papers for them will be a marriage license. They can't take it off the Social Security card. It must be their marriage license or a divorce decree that shows how their name changed.
So it is different for women and more complicated for women. Yep. I don't know where those documents are.
Well, you can walk into your bridge to the courthouse, Markham Courthouse. We're out here in the South Rim, out in Orland Park. So you can walk into your courthouse to where you would find your records, like your certified birth certificate. You can walk in that day of, they will hand that back to you. I believe your certified birth certificate might be $18 or less, and they hand it to you day of. Same thing with your marriage license, depending on the county and the state that you got married in.
All right, Mary, you've got more information than I have time. What office do you work in?
At the Orland Park office.
You are good, lady. You are on it.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put you on hold. I want to get your phone number just in case I have another question like this. Can I give you a call?
Sure.
God bless you. Hold on a second. Thanks for the phone call. John, bad guest story. My mother-in-law is always late, like 2 hours or more. She'll always bring her famous potato salad, though, which is good, except we ask her to bring dessert. I'm almost sorry I've bitten this thing off, but you've got questions, and we'll get you more answers on tomorrow's show.